Welcome to Conscious TV with Tom and Ramon. Tonight we have a pretty special guest, but before that, let me go over a couple of little business things here. January 5th, Ramon and I are going to be doing a live show on BBS, and we will welcome your call-ins. And if my arm gets twisted in the right direction towards the end of the show, I might even break out the tarot cards. Who knows? Anyways, I'd also like to remind everybody, our website is conscious-tv.com. You can go and listen to all the archives of all our past shows there and check out what's going on. I've got that Dr. Emoto's rice experiment going on, and you can watch the progress of that. I'm on day 25 now. This is being recorded on solstice, which is December 21st. So I've got another 6 days before, or 9 days before the end of the year, and we'll see if we got any more dramatic results in that. It's actually, if you check it out, you'll see that there is definitely some definite results. So also, I'd like to remind everybody that Ramon and I are both blue collar guys that work for a living, and we're doing this show out of our own pocket. And if you guys have a buck or two to drop our way, we have donate buttons on both the website and on the BBS website. So we would appreciate any assistance that anyone can give. So Ramon, who do we got tonight?
We have Renato Longato, was born in Lima, Peru in 1961. He studied sociology, law, and political science at the Inca, I'm going to mispronounce this, Garcilaso de la Vega University, and is an author, researcher, and lecturer. Renato's life changed after three consecutive UFO sightings in 1979. His experience and ET contact increased within the years. Renato, how are you today?
Very well. I'm glad to be with you both guys, Tom and Ramon, and ready to talk about this unexplained phenomena for most of the people that have a very explanation, you know, in the long term and in the present time, which is the ET presence. Beyond the UFO subject, there is an ET presence. They are here. They've been visiting the planet Earth for centuries. They've been recorded from different civilizations and cultures along the time. And right now, still the same. We've been visited again, but right now with technology, with the internet, they are showing their presence to all kind of people from any kind of walk of life, race, status, religion around the world. And what is happening right now, the ET presence is shaping the global consciousness of the human being, trying to educate them in a neutral way for the future contact they will have with our civilization.
Okay. So going with your personal experience back in 1979, what was it that shaped you personally with this? Was it a contact, a physical contact, or you just saw the ship?
1979, I was 16 to 17 years old. And I have these three consecutive UFO sightings when we were living outside of Lima City. What happened is that we have the loss of a loved one, a relative in my family, and we decided to move outside the city. And we were living in a chalet surrounded by farms and just even archaeological ruins nearby on the east side of Lima, in a place named Santa Felicia. And in that time, I was just a regular kid, you know, loved to play soccer, go to spend weekends with my friends, go to a party, go to the movies, just whatever other teenager does in that age. And after my first UFO sighting, which involved two UFOs very close, like two blocks away from my house, and there was power interruption on the TV. I was watching a sport program. And then in all the electrical power energy, the street poles, where the electricity were gone for a couple of minutes while the UFOs were hovering nearby my house, you know, made me wonder that we were not alone in the universe, made me wonder the spectacular sighting that I have that made me feel that there was something else. After 15 days, that was in March 1979, first week of April, me and my oldest brother Gino, while driving his truck on the way to our house, the engine stopped suddenly on the highway, and then we were able to see in the distance another UFO almost at the level of the freeway, and we were able to just get paralyzed watching this light hovering in front of us in a certain distance, and this UFO, whatever it was, sent us a beam of light into the cabin of the truck. It stopped completely engine, and then it just moved away. Seconds later, the engine stopped by itself, and we just drove I would say 100 miles per hour to our house, all excited after having that spectacular experience. 2 weeks later, the end of April, first week of May, while I was just reading a magazine upstairs on the second floor of our chalet, our home, around 6 o'clock, it was a Sunday afternoon, we have a power failure, and my younger brother Bruno, which right now is living in Argentina, called us from the garden, from the backyard, and that time was my mother was alive, she was on the first floor. I came down and joined my mom. We went to the backyard, and my brother, younger brother, was pointing to the sky. So above our house was a UFO in a lenticular shape, very brilliant, like steel, like aluminum. And it was just hovering in a pentagonal, hexagonal movement. And in that moment, I felt a smooth vibration on the top of my head and a feeling of friendship. The excitement led to a feeling of friendship, a feeling of trust, a good positive feeling that somehow I knew them for some reason. You know, within time, I was just trying to get all kind of literature books ready to the UFO phenomena, which it was scarce in 1979 in Peru. There were not too many books related to the UFO. There were some spectacular stories. There were some local stories, but they were brief. Didn't have access in that time to English information, in English, to find out more about the UFO phenomena. So one of those nights I was always looking at the sky around 11 o'clock, 12 at night, until my eyes were tired and I was ready to go to bed. You know, one of those nights I went to bed and had this very lucid, vivid dream of a lady, beautiful, kind of Nordic, Eastern European, Russian, Ukrainian, Swedish, Norwegian kind of a female, getting into my bedroom, and everything started to glow and illuminate. And I woke up in my dream, and she approached to me, to make the story short, and she said, "What you need to use is your mind, Renato." And she repeated that 3 times, and I repeat that sentence after her. And then she raised her gently, in a gentle way, her right arm, and touch herself between her eyes while saying, "What you need to use, Renato, is your mind." Then she went away, and the door closed by itself, my bedroom's door. In the morning, I just opened my eyes. It was 6:30 in the morning, and I decided to find any kind of organization, institution, or spiritual movement that have to do with the mind, meditation, stuff like that. So I ended up registering to have these intensive courses offered by Silva Mind Control by Jose Silva. That was in May, June 1979, Ramon.
Wow. I got kind of goosebumps when you were describing the lady, because I had something similar, and the lady kind of sounds the same. It was in 2009. I went up to Vermont. It was the beginning of the year. I went up to Vermont for a conference up there, and I had a dream where this lady was in the room, and she just had this very unique, she looked Asiatic, white, Native American, and she just was mixed with, they took the best parts of every race and just mixed it in this lady. And what she said to me was, all Earth humans have this kind of marking on their foreheads that it starts with something like N and another letter and a number. And that's how they're able, that's how other aliens are able to see them. And I found it really weird that she was saying that we all had this marking on our head.
Number of the beast.
I don't know if it was so much the number of, it didn't feel that way.
That's right out of that's right out of the Bible, that the number of the beast will be on the hand or the forehead, right?
Yeah, but it was something that we can't see it, but in a, I guess in a different light spectrum, they can see it, the way she was explaining it. But it was a very lucid, vivid dream as well.
Yeah. Well, those are the ways they communicate with us. We don't have to have a physical contact sometimes. You know, not all the dreams are visions or messages, and not all the messages and visions are dreams.
Right.
So, and later on, I became involved with the Rama Group. Rama Group is a contacting group that started in 1974. I didn't know anything related to Rama Group before. And months later, I became involved with that group and have all their experiences. As a matter of fact, in 1985, I had an encounter on the Andes outside of Lima with an extraterrestrial being and a distance of, I would say, 60 feet from me in a national park close to a river surrounded by the Andes. And it was really special because I received information or these thoughts, strong thoughts that came to my mind that I have to go outside of Lima, and even saw that place before even I went there physically. So when I arrived there, according to the coordinates that they gave me, I found the place familiar. And once there, I was by myself, and everything started to change. What I mean with everything started to change, the wind stopped blowing, you know, the birds stopped singing and chirping, and the sound of the river and the waves against the rocks, you know, everything becomes silent like it was inside of a bubble. And then in front of me, it appeared a 6'5", 6'3", looked like human being wearing a metallic suit, complete from neck to toe. The shoulders, broad shoulders, I would say the arms, a little bit longer than ours, almost close to them, to the knee. You know, now I'm very relaxed telling this. I've told this several times, you know, the people who want to know my experience. But in that time, I was very excited. I was with fear, completely fear. I was curious at the same time. I think that all those mix of emotions paralyzed me. That's what I have this encounter. If not, I would have run away. But anyway, he raised his hand. He said that his name was Anael, A-N-A-E-L. And he said that they've been watching me. I mean, they in plural, not only him, that I've been in under surveillance or observation since 1979 when I have these first UFO sightings. And that time was 1985, you know, like 6 years later. And he called me through another name. Instead of saying Renato, he said Amurac, A-M-U-R-A-C. And he says that that's my real name. That involves the vibration turning into letters. And it's also my personal mantra. And they say that I should continue doing what I was doing. I should continue working to have a shift of consciousness that in the future, my activity will involve many people within time, that I cannot lose the opportunity to continue with the contact with them if that is my will, that they will be in contact with me. To make the story short, this extraterrestrial being, this almost, I would say, that disappear, that I would say that that was perhaps a holographic projection. For me, it looks so real, looks so human-like, even though I can tell that he smiled, and when he smiled, he have no teeth like us. He have some sort of a mouth protector that the boxers use, right, or other sportsmen use, you know. And he have a very delicate gray hair close to his shoulders, you know, somehow prominent cheeks, a little bit as you said, Ramon, the eyes were kind of almond shaped, kind of Asian, you know, strong chin, and tall, healthy, I would say late 30s, early 40s. And when everything vanished, I would say everything vanished, the sensation to be in an artificial place, to be in a sort of bubble, the wind start to blow, you know, the birds chirping, the water, everything. And I saw behind the mountains a disc, you know, just hovering above the mountain in complete silence, and then it just moved away. So I don't know how long lasted that experience, perhaps 5, 7, 8 minutes, but it was very, very impressive, and it completely changed my mind. And one of the things that I learned is was to think about it, to ponder about experience, and to tell just a few people about it, because most of people would consider this bizarre, and even though that I was suffered some sort of hallucination, but for me it was real, and that changed my life. And since then, I've been having, you know, these synchronicities of events. Sometimes whenever I go and someone take a picture of me, behind me there is a UFO. Or someone takes a video and the area and there is a UFO. Or like I've been in Machu Picchu, in other places, I take a picture and there's the UFOs there, you know, it just show up. It's not Photoshop, it's not like that. It's like, you know, how many people can experience that? It's like winning the lotto. Statistically, is beyond any normal regular concept. 1 in 1,000, 1 in 1,000,000. I don't know. I don't have the answer. But there is a connection within that has been changing within the years. So I understood that their presence is like a cosmic anthropologist, that they want to know how we're evolving. They want to know what are the decisions are we going to make for the near future that will change completely our way of thinking and our society and the way we get along among each other here on Earth, and how we're going to try to, as human race, to work together. And that's going to be one of the biggest challenges. Within the years I receive, and other people close to me receive, predictions regarding what's going to happen in the future. At the present, 60% of the prediction come true. So I don't want to wait for the other 40%. So my time off, I dedicate my time to give lectures, workshops, to give interviews, to write articles sometimes, and to talk about, you know, the most important thing. I think it's important, I mean, in my case, to understand the ET pressing is real, but I think that it's determinant, a shift of consciousness, whether you believe or not in UFOs, whether you believe in other extraterrestrials. So that's part of my ongoing experience with them. You know, I've been at the ECT Ranch in the last 2 years. I mean, Ramon has been there, you know, in 2009, 2010. And I've been quite lucky to have able to cut on tape twice, you know, a spectacular UFO sightings there. So it is a relationship, I would say, in a different way that I have with them. You know, sometimes, you know, there are moments that you have doubts, even of your own experiences, that you have to come back to reality, and this is a reality you have to live on. You know, as you said at the very beginning, I mean, you're blue collar guys, I consider myself also a blue collar guy, you know, and we need to pay bills, we need to go back to reality. So how you manage to have an extraordinary experience living a ordinary life. So it's kind of tricky, but that is the point. The point is that this experience, you know, you can change the experience, alter the experience, because you have an ego problem and make it more spectacular, you know, like you are the chosen one, you are the special one, you know, or maybe you can deny that because around you in your environment, your family is too religious, or you can lose your job, or it can affect your relationships also with your loved ones. So to balance that, it requires a little bit of introspection, it requires to ponder, it requires to dig into yourself, to look to yourself. As they said, you know, the most important contact is not with us, the most important important contact is with yourself. And that's what I've been trying to do all these years, guys.
It's the consciousness thing is becoming so huge right now. And it's actually getting acknowledged even through the nuts and bolts UFO area, where they're actually starting to acknowledge that consciousness has a huge effect on what kind of contacts people have. Without having that conscious connection, you don't really receive the right messages, I don't think.
I think you're right. I agree with you. You don't have the right intent, the level of understanding to absorb and digest an experience. You can lose it. And I met people that have a wonderful experience, you know, spectacular, but they lost it because they didn't manage to keep, raising their consciousness to to the next level. And that's our own effort. There's not here a magic instant gratification solution to all our problems or all our crises that we have go through when you are doing this treacherous path of rise your consciousness level sometimes. You know, it's beautiful, it's an adventure, but it also can be a little bit tricky. And as you said, go ahead.
It can be very tricky, especially because while you're going through that process, it creates or it prompts you to look at all the other areas of your life. I mean, you look in the mirror and you're able to see exactly who you are. And when you can do that, you look at the person in the mirror everybody's judgmental. I don't care what anyone says. You're going to judge yourself whether or not you're a good person or a bad person. And if a person takes that true look at themselves in the mirror through this process and to be able to reach the next level, they have to do that. They have to look in the mirror. They have to see who is really there. And, that's the tricky part right there, because there's people. You can be the nicest guy in the world, but you've got some skeletons in your closet that you're going to have to dig up when you start raising your consciousness.
That's true. I agree with you. That's the way it is. We cannot deny that reality. You are denying that reality that you're living a mirage. You're tricking to yourself, and it will be more difficult to come back, to be genuine, and to go forward in your life.
Yeah, south of the border, the Mexico, South America, they seem to be a lot more open to the UFO phenomena. You think it's the propaganda that we get here in the U.S. that makes them more open, that they don't get down there, that makes them more open to it?
No, I think it's the culture.
Yeah.
The response is always cultural. You know, an American don't see the ET phenomena the same as a Japanese can see it, or German can see it, or a Latin or Latino guy can see it. We interpret according to our culture. So let's say I'm Peruvian. I was born and raised in Peru. But, when you're in the last days of your high school, this instead of going to Cancun or to have a spring break, they send you to Machu Picchu, to Cusco, to know your history. And we have all these archaeological ruins right there. We have all the shamanism, medicine plants right there as a part of our culture. So we are in touch with that religious, magical belief somehow. We're in touch with those power places naturally. We're in touch with Mother Earth. So since the Inca Empire almost ruled half of South America, and then you have the Mesoamerican area with the Mayan, Olmecs, Aztecs, Toltecs, all mixed as well, there's a rich heritage that have in their midst, ancient visitors or the gods like Quetzalcoatl, who was a white person with, beard and blue eyes, like Wiracocha, also a white guy who was, welcomed by the first natives when the conquistadors arrived in Peru. So the local natives thought they were the Wiracochas coming by. How they can have that image imprint in their mind where there was no, photograph or the computers or anything like that. That was based on oral tradition. So the presence of aliens, quote, and, you know, ancient cultures and mythologies and stories around. It's very much alive somehow, you know, in that countries. So people, besides that, you know, we are not a superpower, an hegemonic power, so we don't have a problem if there are in the national Earth space. They didn't try to shut down any, you know, fighter pilot. They didn't try to shut down any military base. They just show up, and it becomes natural. So since then, the population is very open to those things. It's very open to believe that ETs are for real. And now with the rise of technology, you can see in YouTube, you know, thousands of videos. Some of them are fake, of course. Others are for real. That people are taking and people are having their own experiences and making their own opinions about that. So again, I think it's a cultural response regarding the ET phenomena. And the difference with the United States, with America, it is that the power of structure, the way it is here, make it very complex. Since this is the superpower, you have many levels of information, many levels of way to deal with society, many levels of influence through the media, through policies, through the economy, etc., etc. So it's very difficult to try to make people understand that somehow the ET pressing is here, but it's not here to make any damage, to take over us or to control us, to bring fear to the population. They should have done that 200-300 years ago. You don't have to wait to develop, you know, atomic bombs, you know, weapons of mass destruction. They could have done that before. They couldn't wipe us out 1,000 years ago. They don't need us to, you know, to have this overpopulation right now. So the interpretation varies according to the society we're living on, you know.
So even the Mexican and South American governments are much more open to it. You know, just like that big release from the FLIR video of the craft that they released last year.
Well, definitely, that FLIR video that with 11 UFOs following, you know, a airplane from the military and Mexican army that were trying to chase drug lords in the area of Campeche, south of Mexico, was released after serious consideration. And they finally decided that it was not a threat to the national security. And finally, they decided to call Jaime Maussan, the well-known Mexican, you know, reporter and ufologist, known in, you know, in America and worldwide. So they released the whole context of the video. They interview all the officers and the tripulants of that plane, you know, people with coherent people, intelligent people, you know, in a good physical shape, and they all declare the same. They all agree with that, and you have, besides their testimony, you know, the video with the FLIR camera that they can, you know, tell you they were being followed, not chased, followed by 11 UFOs. That was the reason that within time I coordinated with the Peruvian Air Force a private meeting, a private conference in the Peruvian School of War, the Air Force School of War, on December the 12th, 2005, a private conference between Jaime Maussan and the top generals, members of the Peruvian Air Force representative, you know, in the Peruvian Congress, the director of the control tower of the Lima's International Airport, the director of the civilian air traffic controllers in the airport of Cojique, that's the name of the, you know, private airport, biggest airport in Lima, Peru, and members of the telecommunications department of the Ministry of, you know, Energy in Peru, and other people like, you know, this philosopher Fernando Fuensalida, who used to be the consul or the prime minister of Peru in that time, and he was interested in the UFO phenomena. What happened is that the Peruvian Air Force didn't want the media knocking their doors and trying to find out more, and maybe, you know, changing the subject into more spectacular or bizarre news. But they were eager to know. And what happened is that Jaime Maussan was very kind enough to show the whole context of the video, not the one we see on the internet. The one we see on the internet, is, I think, is 5 minutes. The whole context is like 15 minutes. And there were fighter pilots there. They knew how to operate that camera. When they check it out, they said, you know, this is not a fake one. This is not a hoax. We can tell the coordinates, the altitude, all the instruments and the gadgets there, and say this is a real video. So then after that, after Jaime Maussan gave a wonderful lecture explaining about the ET presence and what happened behind the curtains when the Ministry of Defense in Mexico in that time gave him the video and making a press conference open to the public, he told all the details, you know. And then after that, all these military personnel, you know, came forward and started to tell their testimony how they chased in a specific different part of Peru UFOs, how they've been following UFOs, you know. So that's why they created the Bureau or the Office of Internal Affairs related to aerial phenomena, quote, not UFOs. For them, the technical word is aerial phenomena. To try to train their own people and to give, you know, a better report when these UFOs are in the national airspace, because whatever object, whatever aircraft is getting without permission to the national airspace, you have to identify them. Maybe it's from Brazil, maybe it's from Colombia, maybe it's a drug dealer, maybe it's a terrorist, maybe it's whatever, someone who gets lost. But it's a UFO. How you can do that? Not because you are a member of the Air Force. You know how to make a report. You know how to handle that. So that was also part of the system they implemented, you know, in that time. And it was through this private conference that I was, you know, in charge to coordinate. And it went very well. And it helped to educate also the officers of the Air Force how to handle the information and how to understand that it's a real phenomena. And they have so many testimonies to share, believe me, Tom and Ramon, that there were cases that you will never expect to know. Even though after that, it created such opportunity that I have copies of two magazines, from the official magazines of the Peruvian Air Force, with two articles related to UFOs, written, you know, by Peruvian Air Force officers. So is that the way it is open over there? The same thing in Brazil, the same thing in Chile, the same thing in Uruguay, and the same thing in Ecuador. So, you know, Colombia will be next, perhaps Venezuela will be next, you know, in Costa Rica, it's a big time. I've been there in Costa Rica 5 times, and we have some experience there near the volcano Irazu, which is nearby, 2 hours from the capital of Costa Rica, San Jose. We have UFO sightings. It was recorded for 30 minutes, and 2 weeks later, there was a UFO wave in Costa Rica in such spectacular way that even people driving their cars downtown San Jose stopped in the middle of the streets, came out of the cars just to see in the sky all these UFOs hovering. You don't see that on CNN. You don't see that in other major, and I wonder, another major TV corporation, you know, but it was just mind-blowing. So from now on, you know, you have on a regular basis information about UFO presence in Costa Rica, in Peru, in Chile, in Brazil, in Uruguay, and in Ecuador. So that is a welcome. You know, it's not taking as something bizarre or is a, you know, or is a balloon or is a weather effect. It is a UFO or it's not, you know. And you can have the testimonies from people, civilians, as well as people from the armed forces over there.
My question to you is, if you had to guess, which country would be the first country to have direct contact with extraterrestrials, Like, you know, they come down.
On an official basis, you mean?
Yeah, on an official basis.
This is a very interesting question. It is a good one, really. You know, au contraire, you know, the country who can deliver the biggest, you know, news in the world and change the course of events, it's America, it's the United States of America. And I think based on the circumstances that we're living right now, because we're in crisis, I'm not talking only about the economy or politics. We're talking about many things going on the planet right now. But the only superpower that have soft power, I mean diplomacy, and have muscle power, I mean military power and presence in the world, it is the United States. Upon the circumstances, and I will say, and in the midterm, in the next 10 years after 2012, you know, there will be the opportunity of a coherent a approach from ET intelligence with the American elite. When I say American elite, I say the militaries and the politicians, you know, and they will offer an encounter. And it depends how these people handle the situation, because there is a pattern. This is the only country when someone like Kenneth Arnold in 1947 coined the term flying saucer. This is the only country that in September, that was in, if I'm not wrong, June 24th, when Kenneth Arnold flying in Mount Rainier in Washington State coined the term flying saucer. The next month in July, if I'm not wrong, 7th of July, there was a UFO Roswell crash UFO in New Mexico. In September 1947, there was this first document in that time from the military air force. There were not separate branches. There were not the U.S. Air Force. It was a military air force with one of the biggest top commanders about talking about classified information that the ET presence was real and was not from another superpower like Russia, China, another country. That was was real. The ET presence was real. And that was in 1947. Then you have the Cold War contactees. When I would say Cold War contactees, like George Adamski, Daniel Fry, and I'm forgetting the third one. I'm sorry.
Barney and Betty.
No.
Betty Barney Hill was in the 60s. There was another person. I forgot his name right now. But there
isn't his name George too? George.
I think it's
George Adamski and George. He's from California, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he's from California. He was involved in the military. No, he was from New York, from New Jersey. I forgot.
Oh, you're talking about
from New Jersey.
From New Jersey.
He moved to California, and he died just 10 years ago. And he was also part of the army for a moment. And
he got Corso. 35. You're not talking about Corso.
No.
Philip Corso. He's a contactee, a well-known contactee, and I forgot his name. I'm gonna try to find it.
I have it in a book.
Yeah. But this Cold War context is the one who start to say, you know, the dangers of nuclear weapons, of weapons of mass destruction that can, you know, wipe out the human race. And then you have, in the 60s, you know, in the 60s, you have...
You're talking about George Van Tassel.
Not him. You're close. Not George Van Tassel. There's another one who's not, you know, people have forgot about him, but he have the most spectacular cases with witnesses, local witnesses, even local policemen, and he was able to give them and release them films about this program, pre-coordinated UFO sightings. You know, his case is really, really spectacular, and many people have forgotten about him. But anyway, his name will come in a moment, you know. Then you have, in the 60s, as Tom said, you know, Betty and Barney Hill, the biracial couple that in 1961 have this case of abduction. At the same time, what was happening in the United States? It was happening the first movement of civil rights movement with Martin Luther King, and the ETs to call the attention of the public and the media choose a biracial couple, Betty and Barney Hill. So if this contact would have happened in Russia, would have prospered, would have been, you know, on the media? No. As a matter of fact, in 1944, there was a huge UFO wave in Russia. There were contactees in Russia. There were members of the Russian Air Force, Soviet Union Air Force in that time, you know, but they were not able to talk to the media because that was a communist country. There is no free press, you know, free opinion there. So if a contactee will have the same opportunity in Cuba or in, you know, South Africa in the moment of apartheid, or, you know, other countries like Germany and Italy recovering from the Second World War, no, it is a very close relationship with the ET presence and the United States. So in the 60s, you have the first cases of abductions. You have the first time when the people start to experience with psychedelic drugs to have this expansion of consciousness. It was happening right here in the United States. Then in the 70s, what happened? You have the major contactees, Billy Mayer, Jean-Claude Bourillon, Enrique Castillo Rincon, you know, and the Rama group in Latin America. All of them decided to form groups, decided to form the contactee around the contactees, formed groups around them. At the same time in the early 70s, what happened? For the very first time, Saudi Arabia blackmailed the Western societies, you know, with trying to cut off oil production. So there is a pattern here that I've been researching, that I find out through the years, based on the information that I received from them, you know. So, and that's also the subject of my third book, my first book in English, which will be, you know, ET Presence, USA, and New World Order. So there is a pattern here, and there is why, a reason you have these esoteric symbols in the most popular currency in the dollar bill. There's no other country in the world that have esoteric symbols in the paper currency. There is a reason why it's so popular. Everybody can see the pyramid, the eye, all-seeing eye, you know, Novus Ordo Seculorum, New World Order, you know, all these Masonic-related, Rosicrucian-related symbols around it, because there's a reason about that. And the reason is very close related with the ET presence. I will say.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find it because I have it in this book.
So it's almost seeming like somebody could probably make a case for extraterrestrials subtly guiding society. You know, they like with the for the Betty and Barney Hill thing, abducting that interracial couple right during the civil rights movement. I mean, was it which came first, the chicken or the egg type thing? You know, was that instance have something to do with the creation of the civil rights movement or bringing it more to the consciousness of society?
Bring it more to the consciousness of society, Tom. I think so, because they don't care. They don't see the difference that we have the difference here. Let's say for a moment, you know, we are invited to have a contact with them, a pre-coordinated contact. They say, let's go to this area here next month at Saturday 8 o'clock. You can be there and bring two more guests that you consider they can handle the situation. You are welcome to have a UFO sighting to start a basic interaction with us. But in the meantime, you know, we're going to pack our backpacks, our camp tent and everything, get all our stuff, our gear, and then we go and take all of us in one car and go to the highway. But something happened to the engine or to the tire or whatever, and we don't arrive in time, and we miss the opportunity. They don't understand that something happened to our engine. They don't understand that perhaps you have to work overtime because you have to work. If not, you can have problems, you know, with your boss or your supervisor. They don't have problems because, I mean, oh, I got sick, I got the flu. What is the flu for them? What is working overtime? You have to work for money? How is that? That doesn't mean they are gods, they understand everything. But at the same time, they use, in purpose, these people to trigger the attention of the media. For the very first time, there has been other abductions around the world. But the most spectacular, the most well-known, the most researched at the very beginning was the Betty and Barney Hill case. in the 60s. And don't forget that in the 1962, we have almost a real issue with Cuba and Russia and the missile crisis with Nikita Khrushchev, the Soviet president, and John Fitzgerald Kennedy, JFK. We almost wiped out the human race in 72 hours. In 72 hours. And then you find out in a National Press Club, you know, a few months ago, that there was all these high-rank officers, you know, like Robert Sala, saying that the ETs, the UFO, deactivated nuke missiles since the mid-60s. Is that a coincidence or not? Is that not a coincidence or what? There's no coincidence. They've been checking how we handle situation. They've been checking and find out how they can shape the collective consciousness according to the time we were living. The 60s is not right now, like, you know, we're in the new millennium. It's not the 70s. And it's not the 80s. It's not the 90s. The 90s changed everything because we have internet. We have the web, the World Wide Web. And then the information goes just viral. So everything is going fast right now. So their approach is completely different right now. It's according to each generation because they have all the time of the world. They are not affected by our problems and limitations. Above all, they are not affected by time and space, you know.
So we've got about 12 minutes left here. What do we got? I'm looking at the future and what we can do as, say, your everyday person on the street. What can that person do to, if they are interested and want to help promote this connection, this communication, to bring this consciousness level higher in society, to open up the doors to our galactic neighbors, to where we can have that open communication? What can somebody do? What do we need to do here?
Well, that's a good question. I think that depending on, you know, besides the belief system that you have, whether it's religious, philosophical, whether you are an atheist, whether you believe it or not, we have to try to be better human beings. And if you are trying to raise your consciousness, no matter what, you're going to become concerned about the ecology of the planet. No matter what, because we have to be self-sustained. Right now, the infrastructure of society based in a free market, cheap hydrocarbon resources, you know, gold and the dollar is not working very well. So we have to look for another source of energy. We have to develop a higher level of communication, dialogue, and compassion. And we have to understand that we are not alone in the universe. That will turn the history and most of the human knowledge completely upside down. And we have to understand that we are living in a transition from an ethnocentric world. It's ethnocentric world, I would say, you know, my country is important. My way of living is important. My race is important. My religion is important. And you don't. You are not, because you look different. You believe in a different thing. And, you know, we have difference. So we better keep separate. But we live in one world. We live in one planet. So we have serious problems here that we have to address and confront. And I'm afraid there will be not a cosmic abracadabra here, an instant gratification that can solve things. This will require time, patience, and in between some wild cards can come. So it's good to have a shift of consciousness. Whether you believe in UFOs or not, whether you believe in ET presence or not, it will come up by itself. It's a course of events that we're going to face this new reality and we'll have a new cosmology in the near future. It's just a matter of time. In the meantime, it is much better to understand that we live in systems within systems. That the major system that keeps us alive is the biosphere. And if the biosphere gets affected or get damaged, all the other subsystems, and include us, the animals, and then, you know, the rainforest, the rivers, our natural resources, can collapse, can be damaged. And if we don't understand that we have to develop some sort of eco-religion to love what we have and also to be compassionate and loving with life to preserve that, we're going to pay the bills. In the future generation are going to pay a big bill. So this is the turning point. We are the people who have to confront this reality in a creative way. We have to find things. And if some people say, no, we're doomed, this is going to change, the 2012 is going to be the end of the world, it's going to be the end of the world. You know, this is just a story. This is a myth. This is esoteric folklore. This is not going to happen because the Mayans started 3,132 years ago. Doesn't mean the Mayan calendar. Doesn't mean that it's going to end on December 22nd, 2012. It's a transition. We're going to be in alignment with the center of the galaxy. And we're going to receive some sort of energy that can also help us to understand that there are astronomical cycles, that we are part of it, that our astronomy just on the peak of the iceberg trying to know that the Mayans knew for a couple of thousand years ago. So let's be humble and let's try to understand that we're not alone, that we need each other, and we have to look for solutions in a creative way, using our emotional intelligence, using our technical resources, using our own cultural reserve, Tom. I mean, we think that China and India don't have in their cultural reservoir, you know, those are state civilizations. A state civilization. They are not 200 years old. They are thousands of years old. Do they don't have medicine plants? Do they don't have techniques like Tai Chi, meditation, and other things that can help, you know, mix with the Western society to help create a unique perspective for the future? Of course. So what the problem is a paradigm. We have to change this model, which is infinite resources, infinite production, infinite consumption. Doesn't work. So in between something could happen, yes, we have to understand that something could happen, you know, but that's the way it is. I'm thinking that all this, I'm talking about the cosmos and talking about our place in the cosmos, our place in the solar system, our planet, is part of the big plan that there is a source of energy, you name it God or the great architect, whatever you want to name it, you know, that is trying to tell us that there is an evolution in the human spirit and there is an evolution in the intelligent creature. That it was designed to do that. It was designed to achieve a broader perspective and a brighter future. But it depends on us. So right now we have to choose what path you want to choose. Life or continue this way? Because this way is not working anymore. So whether you believe it or not, I would say, again, let's turn to the basics. They have a higher level of common sense. And let's try to be a better human being. You see that, as you said at the beginning, you look at the mirror, and you said, yes, these are the things I have to work around. And we have to review our belief system and understand what part of our belief system is not helping us to grow.
That's a really hard one for a lot of people, when something is instilled so hard into you from a young child. It usually takes a good knee to the jaw to shake a person's life up where they're just like they have to start questioning everything because just everything crumbles around them.
True, and the thing that gonna question us is you can question by yourself, you know, your higher self, or an exterior event can make you question that. So there are two ways they're gonna make you question. So We're in that. We have all the information now. We have all the tools now. Like never experienced before. We have all the arms and missiles that can wipe us out also at the same time. So why don't we choose that? We are in this process, and this is very going to be, the next years are going to be very interesting, my friends.
Yes, they are.
Last thing is, one thing I've noticed is, a lot more and more people have become, I think in our history now, this point in time is when we're at the most aware.
True.
Which it's only going to grow more and more because, you know, especially in the States and even here, a lot of people won't talk about certain things in public in front of other people. But when they see you alone on the side, they'll talk to you about it.
It's true. It's true. That's what happened, you know. Yeah. People are a little bit, you know, no, I don't want to talk, and we pointed like crazy or wacko. But everybody have the same feelings. Everybody's just joining this journey.
That's changing too, though. I mean, that's changing. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's more. It's becoming much more open. And that's a good thing. I mean, we have to do that. It's been a long time coming. So we're getting close to the end of the show here, Renato. Tell us about your what your books and your website, and where they can pick that stuff up.
Sure. I'm on Facebook, you know, just type Renato Longaro, you know, I'm on Facebook. I also have my website, www.renatolongaro.com. I have written two books in Spanish, an essay, A Message from the Andes, 1993. When I talk about these changes, in page 14, I talk about these changes of the collapse of the financial system, ecological movements, and ET contact, 1993. Then I have another one in 2005, The Secrets of the Inc Empire, The Unknown Architects of the Inc Empire Related to Lost Civilizations and the Presence of Lost Civilizations on the South Pacific that, you know, was introduced to the Andes, you know, the survivors of a lost civilization, you name it, Lemuria or Atlantis, you know, and mixed with the locals and created the base of the Inc Empire as we know it now, was as a result of several trips that take me to major archaeological ruins, even to Easter Island. And then I'm working right now as part of my experience and also the information I receive and also research. You know, trying to do both. You know, not everything is mystical. Not everything is experience. You know, that's my experience. But based on also research, and my book for next year is going to be ET Presence, USA, and New World Order. So I will talk about the geopolitical dislocation that are coming also, because everything is changing, you know. We're talking about the ET presence very close related to United States of America and the role of the United States of America into the changing, the new society in the future. And also, why is the presence of the extraterrestrial and what is the reason they are here? So far, based on experience and based on research at the same time, I'm writing about that, and hopefully it will be published July next year on Tom and Ramon.
So is that one, that one's going to be in English, right?
Yes, definitely. That will be in English.
Great. I can't wait for it.
As soon as you get it published, please let me know so we can bring you back on to the show.
Absolutely.
Guys, you will have a free copy for you both.
Yay.
Okay, well, everybody, thank you very much for joining us tonight. Thank you, Renato. We really appreciate you coming on. And I want everybody to remember, condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance. Ramon?
I want everybody to have a safe, happy holidays and a happy new year. And just remember, as a lot of people say, put your intention out there. Put the good thoughts out there, because you are creating your reality whether you notice it or not.
All right. Good night, everybody. Well,
good night, guys, and Merry Christmas to you all.